Hello and welcome back to Even More News, the first and only news podcast. My name is Katie Stoll.
First and only Katie Stoll. Hi, I'm Cody Johnston, the second one, I guess.
There's several of you out there. And joining us today is the brilliant, the beautiful Dave Schilling.
Thank you so much, Katie, for that introduction. It's great to be back. I feel like the last time I was on here was not that long ago, but it feels like a long time ago because we were talking about GameStop, which is something I don't even I don't think about at all anymore.
Oh my God.
I know. Yeah.
That happened in 2019. That's long.
I saw some article that I did not investigate further that was about GameShare stops.
GameStop shares. He said GameShare
stops. GameStop shares.
We must stop the GameShares.
Like an hour ago. So there is some sort of news, but not one that I'm going to break down today.
Speaking of whatever we were just talking about, thanks to American Giant for supporting Even More News. As we all navigate through our new normal, we need to come together and support our communities. American Giant has built a 100% USA-based supply chain with relationships with factories, workers, and communities. Get 15% off your first order when you use promo code MORENEWS at American-Giant.com.
Before we get started, I've got a fairly important holiday to highlight, or a week. This is National Eating Disorder Awareness Week. And not a lot of jokes here, if any at all, because I think that this one is very important. And it's a big topic to unpack because a lot of people don't really understand eating disorders and they don't understand what it looks like. They don't have the tools to recognize whether or not they are affected by one, because it's not just about people who appear emaciated or have bulimia. Eating disorders come in all shapes and sizes and genders, and there's so much stigma and shame and misinformation about it that we really don't talk enough about it to be able to pinpoint the symptoms. You know, it's not just anorexia. An eating disorder could be like disordered eating. It could be just an obsessiveness with calories, over exercise. It could be binging, not necessarily with purging. And so it's a much more complex thing that, again, people don't know enough about to be able to pinpoint it. And so that's the whole point of the awareness week, so that we can talk and share and destigmatize it. Yeah. So I thought that was a really important one.
Thank you. Actually, yeah, like, you know, normally it's like National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day or something.
Well,
there's, you know,
it also happens to be National Chili Day, and I wasn't sure if I was going to acknowledge that. No, this is
awesome.
I know, we're just gonna, that's why I was like, I'm not sure if we're gonna be making jokes, because I have this one in my back pocket. And one other thing I want to mention while we're talking about this is that it's extra important to highlight it this year during the pandemic, because I know for a lot of people that have been struggling with their relationship to food, with their relationship to their body, experienced a lot of turmoil surrounding these issues during this time. I mean, the pandemic brought everybody's stuff to the surface, and I think that during this time of insecurity and fear, that turning to controlling things that you can control, that's the justification sometimes we make, can be comforting. And so it's created a big struggle for a lot of people. And I think that's also important to highlight as we're talking about it. All right, Dave, you're back and you've been working on something exciting.
I have, yes. I'm so excited to do the plug first.
We want to give this is an important plug. You got to have time to breathe.
Marinate for the people. Yeah. I was a co-executive producer on YouTube's Black History Month special. It's called Black Renaissance, and it is a 90-minute variety show about art history from a black cultural perspective. It's very exciting that we get to share this product. Artistic expression with the audience. This content. Sorry, I worked at YouTube for 3 months. I can't help myself.
You with the lingo.
They do, yes. The algorithm flows through my body. Both Obamas, Barack and Michelle, are on the show. Desus and Mero, Z-Way, performance by Anderson .Paak. Nicole Byer, Stacey Abrams is in this thing. Jemele Hill, the sports writer, narrates a video package about Black athletes and activism.
Is so cool.
Yeah, it's a sounds look massive. It looks at Black history through an artistic and lens, an expression lens. You know, how we communicate to the world through our art, which is oftentimes the only way we can express ourselves because of systemic racism. And so music and fashion and sports and literature and comedy, these are the ways that we have been able to tell the world about our struggle. And so this was a huge responsibility for me and for everybody else that worked on the show, especially all the other Black people who worked on the show, to tell the story and to be respectful of the story and to do justice to our ancestors and, you know, hopefully have something beautiful that our children can watch one day. And hopefully people who aren't Black who want to know more about, you know, how we feel and how we express ourselves can watch this and say, I understand a little bit better. Because I think one of the things people tried to do during the George Floyd protests is have empathy and have understanding and awareness of what it's actually like to be Black in America. Most people don't know, and most people don't take the time to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Most people just kind of go about their lives and say, well, this Black person, I'm sure they're doing just fine.
Yeah.
You know, they've got a job, they're employed, they have no struggle whatsoever. I'm sure people look at me and think, oh, his life is fine. It's not. Everybody has a problem, a struggle, an issue. They face discrimination constantly.
Yeah. As you say that, I've been thinking a lot about that, about this disconnect between knowing intellectually that, yes, systemic racism is a problem, but in our day-to-day lives with the people that we know in our lives and interact with. And I was thinking about that myself when I was younger in college. And there's this whole Bachelor controversy that I do not need to get into, but about that one of the contestants in college taking photos, an Antebellum South party. And she claims, you know, she didn't understand. And it's not okay that these young students don't understand the history and whatever. And I think about that in terms of myself. And I realized, like, yes, I knew intellectually, but at that stage of my life, it felt very disconnected to the fact that, like, one of my very best friends has this whole experience that I know nothing about that they don't even feel comfortable talking about with me. And that's the work that we have to do. That's not on you. That's on us, you know.
Yeah, but it does end up being on you. It does end up being on the Black person or you know, any other minority. If it's an LGBTQ person, if it's a Latino person, if it is an Asian person, they end up having to do all of the heavy lifting to make sure that you understand that they have rights and they have a mind and they deserve empathy and equality. Yeah, it sucks. I hate it.
And I just want to keep saying I'm sorry, but that's like not the thing to do. But I appreciate you and I appreciate your work. And I'm curious what this experience was like for you working on this project, because it is such a huge responsibility and there is so much to unpack. I as you were describing it, I imagine that it was a very daunting thing to be carrying.
Yes, it is pressure. And it's getting up every morning and saying, oh, I have to represent millions and millions of Black people who live today and all the people that came before and like make something that is that pays homage to the struggle and is also forward thinking and forward looking and progressive and isn't exclusionary, because the Black story is not just an American story. It is a global diaspora story. It is about Black people in the UK. It's about Black people in France. It's about Black people in Senegal, Black people in Haiti. Like, there are Black people pretty much everywhere. And they all have different stories to tell. And so telling one story in 90 minutes is an incredibly difficult proposition that required a lot of time and thought and intellectual rigor in order to get to where we got with the show and the story that we do tell. That's psychologically draining. Yeah. I think I was very tired when it was over. Anybody who saw me during those 3 months we were working on it was like, why do you look so sleepy? It's like, well, because I stay up nights thinking about the Harlem Renaissance and whether or not I'm letting Langston Hughes down by making this documentary.
And you were doing that while doing a lot of other things as well.
Yes, yes.
Wearing
also,
a lot of hats. Writing for us.
Writing some more news videos. Yeah, exactly.
And all of your other projects that you have going on. I'm so excited to check this out. It sounds really beautiful, and I appreciate the work that you do.
Thank you.
Before we get into some of these news stories, I just wanted to throw out a couple quick updates. We did a Worst Year Ever episode all about Biden's immigration plan, the steps that he's taken, the reopening of the child detention facility, and unpacking some of that. And it's nuanced. It's not a clear one size fits all answer here. There are things that are problematic and frustrating. There are things that have to be considered. And then we released it and we saw the news that he is reopening another one, a very controversial facility, the Homestead facility, that's run by people that have done a very poor job.
This is a detention center. Like, there's a lot of talk of like, well, this one you're mad about is actually this. And it's like, well, they're shipping containers. So I guess it's not a literal cage, but that's what it is. Influx, you know, overflow facilities, stuff like that. This is Homestead Detention Center.
Yeah. And go ahead, Dave.
Oh, you heard me sighing. Mm-hmm. Oh. I was like, because I was about to say, like, this sucks. I don't like it. I'm very upset. It is using semantics. It is a PR campaign to try to whitewash this problem. It is not addressing the problem. And that is unfortunately what Democrats do when they get into power, is they make things a little bit classier. They put a new coat of paint on authoritarian behavior. This is still authoritarian behavior. This is confining people without due process in prisons, essentially little tiny prisons.
Yeah. And I don't want to talk about it a ton right now because we talk about it for an hour on Worst Year Ever. And you guys should check out that episode because it is complicated, but there are other things that could be done. There are certain things that he's tried to do that aren't happening because of Trump era judges, and this battle is ongoing. But on a very basic level, the one thing that he has done is just bad. Bad optics. It's bad.
And this is the same facility that, like, they were up in arms about. Like, it's not even like the general idea.
I mean,
it's
the other one too, but
facility.
This one really.
There's I don't know if you remember. There's that moment, that PR shot of Kamala Harris. She does like a very dramatic wave and puts her hand to her heart at this place. This is the place.
Yeah, but Joe Biden's the one candidate that never visited this place.
Oh, interesting.
Claiming to
leave. I read that. The whole thing is just it's very frustrating to watch. Because you have this, like, well, defend them by using the language, and like, well, if you call it this, like, this is actually what's going on, and then they just keep going.
Yeah.
But you're right. We don't need to talk.
Well, we've got so much to get to. This is a slightly more heartening quick news update. The FDA has said that the Johnson & Johnson one dose COVID vaccine meets emergency use requirements. So that is very exciting. You can start to see it being rolled out. I just wanted to bring this up because there's confusion about it. It is one dose. It is slightly less effective. And a lot of people are concerned about that. And I get it. But I just wanted to quote my favorite Instagram doctor, King Gutterbaby.
There we go.
She's amazing. She basically says, don't read its 66% efficacy as a D grade. It's 66% effective preventing symptomatic disease. It's 85% effective at preventing severe illness. And it's 100% effective at preventing hospitalization and death. And the primary goal of the vaccine is to keep people from getting very sick. So this is good. This is really good. This means that we can speed up this whole process, because the two doses, that's a lot. That's hard. It's hard to coordinate for the entire world.
Yeah, it's hard to coordinate. It's hard to store them. You know, we have talked million times, like, that if you have to store these things at an incredibly cold temperature, it's difficult to maintain the stock, to keep them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to throw them out, which we have heard about many times.
Yep.
That places are throwing away vaccine. So one shot, even if it's not as effective as the other two, it is better than nothing.
And the
sooner people get inoculated, the sooner things can start to happen again. And, mm-hmm. you know, I hate for this to be about commerce, especially on this show, talking about like, well, we need to get the economy going again. But yeah. We kind of do. Like,
sure.
Unfortunately, there are people starving.
Yeah.
There are people. I was at Walgreens and someone was trying to do a chargeback on something, on a box of a fingernail, like those acrylic nails.
Yeah.
And they didn't have their ID. They didn't have a credit card. They were obviously just trying. They just needed $20. If I had $20 of cash, I would have been like, just take this.
Yeah.
Because clearly you need this for something. Whatever it is doesn't matter. But that is the kind of thing that happens every day in this country, is people doing whatever it takes to eat or to put gas in their car or to make sure that they have electricity. Like, something has to change. And the first step in getting past this and hopefully making the world a better place is stopping the virus and getting people out of their homes and letting them work.
Since
that's the right perspective on it. And if that means that I'm going to take the vaccine doesn't have the 90% check mark on the box, I'm all for it.
Give the people in their 20s and 30s.
Yep.
The Johnson & Johnson vaccine. I'll take that one. I'll probably not get sick. It's fine.
Yeah.
Good-ish news.
Okay, here's some more news. Some more news, if I may. Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about Daniel Prude. We have some very good updates to share with you guys. But first, I got to start with some extremely upsetting news. And it's that none of the officers responsible for Daniel Prude's death will be facing charges. In case you need a reminder, last March, Daniel was experiencing a psychotic episode and he rushed outside and his brother called the cops for help. And when the cops arrived, Daniel was naked. They forced him to lay on the ground. They put a spit hood over his head. This is from Washington Post. Mr. Prude pleaded to be let up, but he seemed to struggle to breathe, according to the footage. His words turned to gurgles and stopped. After 2 minutes, Mr. Prude was no longer moving or speaking, and an officer asked, "You good, man?" When paramedics arrived, Mr. Prude had no heartbeat. They began CPR. He was revived and taken to the hospital, and he died. And I think it's important that we also highlight a little bit more about Daniel's history and his battle with mental health, because, of course, his death is an unmistakable tragedy, a murder. But how he got there and kind of the effects of our system is also tragic and plays a part in this story. This is from the New York Times. Mr. Prude, a father of five children, lived in Chicago, where he grew up in public housing complex. He, too, was one of five children, two of whom died in tragic incidents that left Mr. Prude rattled. As an adult, Mr. Prude worked in warehouses and factories in Chicago's southwest side, and friends remembered him working to help find jobs for others in the neighborhood. He lived with his sister, Tamiche, and grew close to her teenage sons. In September 2018, one of Mr. Prude's nephews shot and killed himself in the home they shared. Mr. Prude's friend said that after his nephew's death, he increasingly used phencyclidine, or PCB, and his behavior became more erratic. And that evening, Mr. Prude began behaving erratically, accusing his brother of wanting to kill him. Joe Prude had his brother taken to a hospital for an evaluation, but he was released within hours and returned to Joe Prude's home. Mr. Prude appeared to have calmed down, but after his return, he asked for a cigarette, and when his brother rose to get one, he bolted out the back door. Anyway, I share all of this because, I don't know, Daniel might have suffered a bunch of mental health issues regardless of his situation, of course, but it is pretty undeniable that a lot of the heartbreaking circumstances of his life contributed to a great deal of stress that was at least exacerbated the stuff that he was dealing with, and PCP and drug use in general is something people turn to drugs when they don't have other options, when they don't have mental health resources, when they don't have things to help them. And I don't know, when I'm reading about this story, I just see not only his tragic death, but like a failure of a system in general. It's this is a story that's familiar that so many people have gone through. Does that make sense? I feel like I'm rambling a little now, but when I read that all of that felt very important. I mean, that evening he tried to get help and was immediately released.
Right. There's a lack of empathy in our society. And I feel like I've said this before on the show that the separation between the political parties, the idea, not even the political parties, because this is a problem across parties. It's a class issue more than anything. But the real separation ideologically in this country is between people with empathy and people who have none. Unfortunately, there are millions and millions of people who suffer every day from lack of employment, from lack of resources, from mental health issues that stem from stress, extreme stress. It is easier to be someone like us. You know, we have homes and jobs and we can order pizza, whatever we want, all that stuff. But there are people who really have to put their lives on the line to survive. They really have to suffer through extreme tragedy, you know, seeing family members die, seeing people struggle, living in close quarters. You know, that takes a toll on every person who goes through it. And we don't care. As a society, we criminalize behavior. Like this, we criminalize people who turn to drugs and alcohol. We criminalize people who behave in a way that seems outrageous to us because they are sick. Mental health is a serious problem that we just continue to ignore, and we use it every time there's a mass shooting. We need to improve our mental health system, and then nothing happens.
Well, even in this, this is from the New York Times. Well, I'll just summarize. The medical examiner ruled that his death was a homicide caused by complications of asphyxia in the setting of physical restraint. But it also said that excited delirium and acute intoxication by PCP were contributing factors. So you're saying, yeah, but this stuff. No,
they tried this on Rodney King in 1991, 92, whenever that was.
The only vaguely not positive. The other side of this is that the New York AG, Letitia James, who announced this finding, also expressed her displeasure and frustration with the outcome. Also from New York Times, Ms. James was blunt in acknowledging that she had hoped for a different outcome. The criminal justice system has demonstrated an unwillingness to hold law enforcement officers accountable in the unjustified killing of unarmed African Americans. What binds these cases is the tragic loss of life and circumstances in which the death could be avoided. And she's also stated a desire to release the sealed records so that the public will know what actually happened. And we do not know when that will happen yet, but... it seems that the request has been granted. So stay tuned for that.
As long as the police prey on vulnerable people, this will never change. And that's what they do. They prey on people just like this who have mental health issues, who are lower class, who no one's going to miss. That is the attitude is, well, it's not who cares what we do to this person? They're asserting their power over someone with no power and no agency. And it's disgusting. And it just keeps happening over and over
again. It's about them. Yeah. And it attracts those kinds of people too. Mm-hmm.
But this does bring us to the slightly better development coming out of the Elijah McClain case. Just a reminder, on August 14th, 2019, Elijah was walking home from a convenience store in Aurora, Colorado, when someone called 911 saying that he looked sketchy, and by sketchy, he was wearing like a ski mask because he had a condition, he needed to keep himself warm, and waving his arms because he was dancing. headphones. The police arrived, struggled to handcuff him, brought him to the ground, used a chokehold, which cuts off the blood to the brain, makes a person pass out. When medical responders arrived, after about 15 minutes, paramedics then injected him with ketamine. And in fact, they apparently misjudged his body weight and gave him way too much of it. He went into cardiac arrest and died a few days later. Okay, the good-ish news is that an Aurora investigation into the death has shown that officers had no legal right to stop him because someone just called and said someone is sketchy. What is that? So they had no legal right to force him to the ground, arrest him, kill him. I mean, I could have told you that, but
yeah, right? There's no need for an investigation into these things. They're pretty open and shut.
I'm going to read a little bit. Officers sat and knelt on McLean and placed him in various restraint holds. At one point, an officer even threatened to have his dog bite McLean, even as the 23-year-old became more compliant and started to lose consciousness. Fast forward, because here it is again. Paramedics accepted without question the police assessment that McLean's condition was a syndrome known as excited delirium. Mm. I just wanted to skip ahead and highlight that here it is again, yep. A phrase, a justification that they used for why they injected him with ketamine. But also these paramedics should know better than the dose that they gave. And I wanted to bring this around because apparently a growing number of experts are calling this what it is, which is junk science, just a justification used to, you know, justify excessive force. But unfortunately, that's where the good news kind of ends, because as of right now, two of the officers and all of the paramedics involved in the incident remain on their jobs. One of the officers was later fired, not because of his death, but because he and several colleagues posed for a photo mocking McLean's death.
I mean, that's also a good reason to fire somebody, but the
it
first
is a fine,
one seems
as well as
fireable.
Everybody else.
I mean, that speaks to exactly what you were saying like 5 minutes
yeah.
ago, Dave.
You can,
know.
That's why I was like, I'm,
you can kill someone, but don't be proud of it.
The one thing they're doing is the Aurora city manager is apparently committed to pursuing the establishment of an independent monitor to conduct police oversight.
This will not change until we stop this cartel that is the police unions. The police unions prevent any sort of meaningful oversight.
That's true.
In millions, every major city in the country. You know, if it's Minneapolis, if it's Los Angeles, New York, wherever it is, there are all of these police unions that dictate terms to elected officials. Mm-hmm. You can't get elected mayor of Los Angeles unless the police union says, it's okay, you can be the mayor, which is why people like Eric Garcetti continue to be elected mayor of Los Angeles, that are more concerned with throwing out the first pitch at a Dodger game than housing people. And police yep. reform and a logical way to combat COVID. Like, he's not interested in actually running the city. And the yeah. and the police union knows that. And they're happy with that. They just want someone to cycle through every few years whose ultimate end goal is going to Washington or being the governor yeah. or something.
You're completely right. I mean, and police unions are behind all the cover-ups, you know, and threatening or people to not disclose information. Or if a officer does lose their job, oftentimes helping find another job in another town. I will say that I want to wrap up this segment by highlighting some of the good police or the good starts that we're seeing around the country towards some police reform. The best one is out of Ithaca. The best one that I've seen. The Ithaca Police Department would be replaced with a Department of Community Solutions and Public Safety. The plan would have armored public safety workers focus on interrupting and solving serious crimes, and unarmed community solution workers who focus on de-escalation. And instead of a police chief, everyone report to a civilian director of public safety. I'm not sure how this all breaks down, but it's one of the more ambitious plans that are floating around there, and they're hoping, you know, to work out some kinks and to show America different ways that it, you know, can think about this problem. In Berkeley, they are moving forward with a new proposal to replace police with unarmed civilians during traffic stops. And yes, the police union has definitely spoken out strongly against that, saying, you know, this is going to be, you're going to find out quickly that this is a problem.
It's going to be chaos on the road.
It's going to be chaos. But that's the start. The rest of it would be also, to separate different departments from the police union as well, or the police department. But this is the way that they were going to start. And other cities, you know, Austin and Seattle, slashing police budgets. We talked last week about how here in LA, the Unified School District has changed their relationship, diminished how much money they're paying to the police union. It's not enough, but it's a start.
Why is the school district paying the police union for anything?
I know.
Why? What is?
Well, there's a lot of officers on campus. But we don't need, yeah.
The money comes out of the school district budget? Why?
Why at all?
Why is
they are
redirecting. Who else needs that money?
They are, the plan is to redirect this into Black student achievement.
Pay teachers a living wage. Make sure people, kids have books. Like, our priorities are so out of whack, and it is because the police as a group, as a cartel, as you know, these police unions, they make sure that whenever someone suggests a solution, a common sense solution to this problem, they're like, well, then I guess it's just going to be Mad Max out there and people are going to be shooting each other. Good luck, pussies. You're all going to die. Like that fear, and their macho response to our fear is what continues to allow them to do as they please, that allows them to act with impunity in these situations, because we give them the authority. We convey value upon the police department because we're afraid. And what are we afraid of, really? What are we honestly afraid of? We're afraid of minorities breaking into our house and killing us and taking our stuff. And that doesn't happen very often. And if it does...
Never once happened to me.
And if it does, the police will not stop it from happening. Because they're not going to get here for 3 hours. They're not going to find my body until it starts to smell so bad that my neighbors complain. And then what are they going to do? Find the person who did it? And then what?
No.
Then they're going to be incarcerated. That person is going to be incarcerated for the rest of their life. And the taxpayer... The person who pays their taxes every April is going to pay to leave that person in jail. In a private prison, maybe, even. And that person is not going to get any better, and the cycle will continue. And the world never gets any better.
Yeah. This was supposed to be a slightly uplifting end to the segment, but
I don't come on here to feel good. I come on here to be upset.
You're completely right. Of course you are. I mean, I agree with you completely. We got to take a quick break, but then we're going to come back for even more news, and we're going to keep this good vibe going.
Did someone say clothes?
No.
Well, speaking of clothes, in 1960, 95% of all clothing was made in the USA, the, quote, greatest country in the world. Today, only 3% is, and part of that 3% is American Giant. Make things better. Make things better. American Giant has a transparent, 100% USA-based supply chain with relationships with factories, workers, and communities. Instead of outsourcing for cheap labor and cheap products, American Giant makes high-quality clothes that are built to last and be durable, not disposable. They're not the cheapest, but American Giant makes better sweatshirts that are better for people and the planet, and won't end up in a landfill a few months later. Oh, and guess what? Surprise, surprise, they're really comfortable. I'm not really a, sweatshirt guy, maybe a hoodie every once in a while. Just, you know, I don't know what it means to you to say this, but I'm just not a sweatshirt guy, whatever that means. But folks, it's so comfortable. It's like a weighted blanket was a shirt. Katie, do you agree?
I agree with you completely. I love my American Giant hoodie. It's a really pretty emerald color, and it's very cozy but not too bulky. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they make that cool balance. It's a sturdy, comfortable, comforting garment.
That's a great way to put it, actually. Cozy but not bulky. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bonus, they support local communities, factories, and workers. Anyway, get 15% off your first order when you use promo code MORENEWS at American-Giant.com. That's 15% off when you use code MORENEWS at American-Giant.com. And we are back as promised for even more news. How about that?
Kept the promise.
Cody.
Hi.
It's the Capitol insurrection hearing.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about it. We should talk about it. And I was like, we're going to talk about it. Cody, you take lead.
Yeah, we can do that. It is what it is. They tried to impeach Donald Trump for the thing and it didn't work. And then they're like, well, we're going to do a 9/11 style commission. We're going to get to the bottom of this. But like, are they going to get to the bottom of anything? Could they potentially... That COVID relief bill, waiting on that. Anyway, so they're doing that today, and they're going to, or they did that, rather, listening to this. And they're actually going to be holding another one, I believe, next week. Part of the hearing involved getting testimony from people who were responsible for security at the Capitol. Former U.S. Capitol Police Chief Stephen Sund, former Senate Sergeant at Arms Michael Stenger, and former House Sergeant at Arms Paul Irving. They all resigned after the attack. And it was just a lot of accounts of like, well, here's what I experienced. Here's my perspective on it. Here's what the violence was like.
It felt like a lot of finger pointing.
People saying
like, well, I didn't know, but you did know. And, you know, of like, when did the Sergeant of Arms... know that there was a call for the National Guard. You know, they seem to be lying. It's frustrating.
There was a lot of that. It was a lot of back and forth on like, we didn't have enough intel. It's not our fault. We weren't prepared. We were prepared. Even if we were more prepared, it wouldn't have mattered. Capitol Police Captain Carnacia Mendoza gave this account. The rioters continued to deploy CS into the rotunda, military-grade CS gas. Officers received a lot of gas exposure, which is worse inside of the building rather than outside because there's nowhere to go. I've received chemical burns to my face that still have not healed to this day. She said she was engaged in the battle for almost 4 hours and that even if Capitol Police had 10 times the number of officers, they would have been overmatched. That seems...
Yeah.
Not... true.
Not accurate.
Well, 10 times the number of officers, they would have still been overmatched.
Sure, that's...
That seems...
Well, yeah, what kind of munitions do these people have if they were if they could overmatch 10 times the number of Capitol Police? What does that mean?
Yeah, it seems... that seems inaccurate. And again, like, the sort of, like, not even passing the buck, it's just, like, shrugging your shoulders, right? It's saying, like, well, even if we had, like, everyone we could want, it would have been the same?
These weekend warriors who dressed up in their Trump hats and carrying their flags, some of whom had heart conditions and were over the age of 60, were gonna outmatch a bunch of people with guns?
Yeah, and like riot gear and tear gas if they'd like. I've seen protests. I've seen protests last year. I've seen the Ferguson protests on national television. They didn't have a lot of trouble. It seems like maybe because the people were who they were that they didn't do enough to stop it from happening.
They didn't take it seriously at all. Because, I think enough of them agreed with what was going on and allowed it to happen. And nobody wants to take credit for that. No one wants to take responsibility for the fact that it occurred. They're going to gin up the numbers and say, oh, these goofballs who drove in their RVs from Montana... We're going to be able to overwhelm trained police officers. Okay.
Well, there's also, they say, like, this isn't something that they expected or, you know, like, okay, well, we know that there's X amount of people that are at the front, but just we didn't expect that the that average citizens would turn into this mob and all this stuff. There's something in that. But you would expect it at a Black Lives Matter protest, but you wouldn't expect it here.
They do expect it. They expect it so much they encourage it. If a water bottle flies into the air, the tear gas comes out.
But that's what I mean. That's the unspoken part of this conversation when we're talking around what happened and how it happened. Also, they care about optics suddenly. That's an excuse. Well, we didn't know about the optics. And you can blame it, or they will say, like, well, you know, look at all the uproar about all the protests, the Black Lives Matter protests. No, fuck you guys. You don't care. You care about the optics of having the National Guard call on a bunch of white people. You don't care about the optics to us. You care about the optics to Trump supporters.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Right. Like, they, which is part of, also part of why they're trying to, some people are trying to claim that they weren't even Trump supporters.
Oh, yeah. There's also people here, I won't name names, trying to, you know, start the conversation about what Nancy Pelosi's role is in it. And it's just all talking about everything but the actual thing.
Yes, exactly. And like, again, like, they're, you know, framing it as though, well, we didn't know. Everybody knew. For quite a while, everyone's like, wow, that day is going to be bad. Look at all these people posting about the violence that they want to do. Isn't that going to be a disaster? That Sund fellow is talking about this. A clear lack of accurate and complete intelligence across several federal agencies contributed to this event, and not poor planning by the United States Capitol Police. We rely on accurate information from our federal partners to help us develop effective security plans. There was a report on the eve of the attack. The FBI sent a report detailing various calls for violence. Again,
they,
which we
emailed
seen.
It apparently.
God. But according to Sun, this is a report that I am just learning about within the last. They informed me yesterday of the report.
Bullshit.
So yeah, sorry, Sun. Nice try. He later in the hearing. Believed that the intelligence community needs to, quote, broaden its aperture on what information it collects. Which is really what we're all really getting to, right? Is we need to figure out what went wrong so we can harden this apparatus and make it stronger and get gather more intelligence, maybe fewer civil liberties around the Capitol. Who knows? Who knows where we're gonna head with this?
This is how these things always go, though. Is something went wrong and it's incompetence. But that failure is never an excuse to fix the incompetence or make the systems run more efficiently. It is, well, we need to take away some of your rights. And you're not going to be able to do these five things. You're not going to be able to wear shoes through an x-ray machine at the airport anymore. Or we're going to put cameras at every single stoplight in your city so that we can film you doing stuff. We're going to monitor your emails.
Or if you have Parler on your phone and you get within X, you know, if you're in the National Mall, then you can't. Like, yeah, there's so many things that can result from this. And it is how it happens.
Common sense solutions are never the thing. It is always, well, we need to form a task force, or we need an agency, or we need to pass this bill that is going to criminalize this thing. And maybe that's...
Let's make it more convoluted.
That could be the only thing the left and the right agree on, is that people's rights are constantly being taken away in this country.
Yeah, that's nonpartisan.
Yeah, that's the unity we've been craving.
One thing I read today is the Capitol Police Chief, the acting chief of the Capitol Police... Yogananda Pittman and the House Sergeant at Arms testified, saying that there are possible threats to the State of the Union. They're going to try to bomb the Capitol during the State of the Union.
They won't learn anything. Not calling the National Guard for optics, not reading the reports, not caring. It's Trump supporters and all that kind of stuff. So let's not take it seriously. They tried to convict the president for inciting this kind of violence, and then Congress said it's actually okay that he did that. We're more or less fine with it. So they're not going to stop doing it. Like, it, that is, that was a pass for people to continue down this path at events like this.
Soft pivot to CPAC, shall we?
Well, so this is actually related to CPAC.
Oh, yeah. Say your thing before I soft pivot.
I just hate Ted Cruz so much, more than anyone of all of them. He's the worst one of all of them. He's such a little worm. And I just, every day, and it's not the Cancun thing, although, sure, you know, he wiggled his way out of that one because he's a little worm. It's so frustrating. During this hearing, he tried to, like Katie, you alluded to, allude to the fact, the idea that, like, Pelosi was actually responsible for this, because he's a little worm. They asked former House Sergeant-at-Arms Irving if he had any conversations with Pelosi or needed approval to deploy additional resources. The answer was no to that question. And it's just, like, obvious stuff like that that's so frustrating to watch amidst everything. Because, like, normal stuff that's frustrating. And then you just have this weird, like, culture warrior, wormy little guy that he's so online. It's so frustrating to watch. And I don't even have a point other than he's the worst one.
Well, I mean, I don't want to belabor this because we're gonna pivot to CPAC, but it is worth talking about before we talk about CPAC that there are so many people now who are jockeying for position to be the standard bearer for the extreme right insurrectionist.
Like Trump's not around anymore. So who's the new
wild
real Donald Trump account?
Instead of saying, all right, this is bad. What happened on January 6th was terrible, and we don't want that to happen again, and we need to purge this element out of the Republican Party because it is noxious and dangerous for the health of the nation. They're saying, well, we don't want these people to stop voting Republican, so what we need is somebody else for them to get really amped up about that's maybe not quite as bad as Donald Trump, that we can control. So is it going to be Josh Hawley? Is it going to be Rand Paul? Is it going to be Ted Cruz? Could it be Tucker Carlson? Maybe we'll make Tucker Carlson a superstar political lightning rod that can mold these disgusting gray goop people into a constituency that will elect another Republican president. And those people
are all
going to do it at CPAC.
Yes, they're all on the slate to audition for this role.
It's not even a soft pivot anymore. That's like
beautiful pivot,
a perfect pivot for us to talk about CPAC.
They're also very bad at it, by the way.
They're also really bad at it. Those guys are going to be jockeying to be that person, but also Donald Trump,
yep,
former president.
Yep,
it's going to be epic.
Will be speaking
unreal
at CPAC. Just totally epic. His big comeback, guys.
He's going to whine about Barbara Streisand being very unfair to him. And he's going to say he won the election by a landslide. And then he's going to leave. That is it.
Well, he's also going to talk about Biden's immigration stuff.
Oh, of course.
It'll be bad.
They said the cages. Yeah, it's going to be great.
They'll turn that around on Biden. Sure.
I mean, that's part of their move, right? It's like even Tucker Carlson, who like does it like on purpose, where it's like you take the little kernel of like, well, that's a criticism that is a valid criticism, and I'm gonna do it, which is like obviously the most hypocritical thing you could possibly do, and just shameless on its face. But they love doing it, don't they?
Yeah, it renders every criticism of them moot because they're just going to use the same one, and then it just becomes such a mess in your mind that you can't wrap your brain around who's right or who's wrong. And then all you do, if you are truly a person who is on the fence or in the middle or unsure or questioning your ideology, you're just going to say, well, I'm just going to vote for my team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we're just going to carve out the electorate, and it's going to be immutable, and the only thing that's going to change anything in this country is turnout and voter suppression.
Yeah. I mean, this whole thing, I just thought there was a moment where I was like, what are they going to do here? What direction is the Republican Party going to go? Are they going to do the right thing, quote unquote, and at least acknowledge and, you know, condemn this man. But no, they haven't, you know.
Oh, they can. They can do both. Mitch McConnell can vote.
They're trying.
Yeah, they can. He can vote to not convict and then give a speech about how he fucking did it.
Yeah.
They can do both. It's great.
Yeah, they can do whatever they want because people aren't going to change their minds because they're so everyone's so addled with information and conflicting rhetoric that we can't think straight.
Yeah. I mean, part of what he apparently is going to talk about is the future of the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And if you are having Donald fucking Trump stand up there and talk about the future of the Republican Party, then
you've learned no lessons.
It's very clear.
You've learned no lessons. Mm. We have learned zero lessons.
They learned the lesson.
Wait, with some
shit. Yeah, they're doubling down on the lesson. The wrong lesson.
But yeah, they learned
no lesson. They just learned a different kind of thing. And it's something else. I wonder who he's going to throw under the bus at that speech.
Everybody. Mitch McConnell is getting it.
Oh, yeah.
He's getting it. The only hope that I have, he's never coming back to Twitter, first of all. There's no way.
Good.
He can't do it. I don't think they can do it. The only hope that I have is that they will continue this interscene conflict within the Republican Party, and it will be so hard for them to coordinate any sort of coherent election strategy that they will literally fall apart.
That feels like a very positive note to wrap this up on. I like
you're welcome.
That.
I try to find the silver linings and everything.
Slim.
I think you're right that we will be seeing some of that. I don't know. I don't know what'll happen. I can't predict anything anymore.
I think they'll
never could, to be honest. But you think they will?
Well, I think they'll struggle in that way. But ultimately, they always fall in line, don't they?
The Republican Party in 2016 was in chaos. There were how many people running for the nomination?
Yeah.
Oh, that stage was full.
Wow, it was painful. And we were all like, this is such a joke. Look at these fools. They're going to eat each other alive. And they did until they found one person that everybody was like, okay, this guy is crazy. He's the craziest of them all. And we got to put our money behind him because he's a winner, baby. And that is what's going to happen is either they're going to collapse from just ideological incoherence and infighting, or they're going to coalesce around an even more extreme version of Donald Trump.
Yeah, they need that. That's the thing. That's the thing about it. They need that that leader for everyone to coalesce around.
But there's only one Donald Trump.
Yes,
he's going to die soon. He is
hopefully.
I don't want to get in trouble. He is an ex-president, but he will die. That is a fact. He is an elderly man. He is in poor health. He barely survived
COVID.
And
maybe they won't find another one. But
He
barely survived it.
Yeah.
This is a less positive note to end the episode on.
It's
not bad.
I am looking forward to that thing we talked about very much.
We end on saying, hopefully. That's a positive
hopefully
word.
He dies
about this
soon.
Thing that we're
he will doing. Die. I'm just saying it is inevitable. We all die.
Yeah.
This
hang your
isn't
head
a
on
threat.
That. Hang your head on he will die.
Dave, remind our listeners where they can find you online, where they can find everything.
I will be not explicitly wishing for the death of former President Donald Trump on Twitter at Dave_Schilling. You could also watch Black Renaissance on YouTube. It's streaming both as a full 90-minute special and as individual pieces on the YouTube platform. Check it out. Just skip to the credits. When I share it, it's going to be set to exactly when my credit shows up. So it'll be like you watched the whole thing and you saw the best part.
That's really beautiful. Funny.
I know.
Well, I'm going to do that and then I'm going to go back and watch the whole
thing.
Thank
you. That's two views.
Yeah. I'll double dip. Thank you so much for joining us. This was great. And guys, just remember that we love you very much. End of episode.